Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining Northern California Chapter Annual Meeting and Research Update. Your host for today is Janelle Del Carlo. Ms. Del Carlo, you may begin.
Hi, thank you and welcome. Good evening. My name is Janelle Del Carlo and I'm the Chapter President for the National MS Society Northern California Chapter. Thank you for joining us for the 2014 Annual Meeting and Research Update teleconference. The Northern California Chapter is a collective of individuals who want to do something about MS now. We serve 12,500 people living with MS in 40 counties, from Fresno to the Oregon border, and we impact the lives of 84,000 people that are affected by MS. This evening's annual meeting is an opportunity to celebrate the accomplishments of the past year, and to thank you for the difference and contribution that you make to the Northern California Chapter. We're also going to approve the slate for the Board of Trustees for 2015. At the end of the annual meeting portion of this call, which I promise will last no longer than 20 minutes, we'll hear from an esteemed researcher, Dr. Mark Allegretta, who is the Associate Vice President of Commercial Research at the National MS Society. We'll all together learn more about the exciting research solutions that are going to help stop disease progression, restore function that's been lost, and ultimately end MS forever. So, for people living with MS, the National MS Society is absolutely the best investment you can make. The Northern California Chapter is committed to keeping people with MS moving. And one of those people, I'm going to tell you a few stories tonight about people, because facts are important and they sure help you frame your opinion of an organization or your opinion of an experience, but what really makes a difference is getting to know people and the difference that your chapter is making in the lives of you all and other people you care about. So I'm going to start by telling you a story about Kate. Kate lives with MS, and like many others affected by MS, Kate took control of her MS by making connections. Connections that helped her get to meet other people living with MS, she connected with friends and family, and she connected with the National MS Society. 7 years ago, Kate completed her first bike MS event. It's called Waves to Wine. It's our annual two-day bike ride from San Francisco to Sonoma County. This year, Kate and her team, the Menstrual Cycles, the Menstrual Cycles is a friends and family team that in this year alone, that's them on the top of your slide, if you can see the presentation. The Menstrual Cycles, this friends and family team, this year alone raised over $120,000. Bike MS celebrated its 31st anniversary, and together, 2,400 cyclists raised over $2.6 million in a single weekend. In addition to participating in fundraising events, Kate stays connected by volunteering. She, along with 1,580 other volunteers, provided over 15,000 hours of service and support to the chapter in 2014. This 15,000 hours of human effort to move the society forward and to move the Northern California chapter forward is truly invaluable. I feel a little like a Citibank commercial when I say it's actually priceless. So thank you. Kate went on to continue her volunteering at Walk MS, and she managed the Wall of Hope, where participants can share why they walk and what they hope for in the fight against MS. Across the 12 locations in Northern California that Walk MS took place last spring, 7,100 participants came together, and together you all raised almost $1.4 million. These and other events, so our walk event, our bike event, and our newest event called Muckfest MS, which is a 5K mud run, together, these events, plus many other community events called Do It Yourself, which are held by our members, raised $4.14 million in a single year. So while money certainly fuels the MS movement, these funds are only important because they support groundbreaking research, advocacy efforts, programs and services which serve the 84,000 people affected by MS in Northern California. And most importantly, the resources raised by the Northern California chapter allow us to help change life, hopefully your life and those you care about. Another volunteer is named Kim. And Kim also lives with MS, and she shared her story on the Walk MS, Wall of Hope. Kim takes advantage of the chapter services and she too makes connections that count. Kim, who's a registered nurse and a care manager, was diagnosed with MS in 2002. That's when she began to take advantage of chapter services. But she also began volunteering because, like Kate, she wanted to support others in her community living with MS. As a self-help group leader, Kim connects the chapter with other people living with MS and community resources. Kim's self-help group is one of 52 self-help groups in the Northern California chapter. She and other group leaders connect people with MS and their loved ones to over 100 programs, including 23 programs, much like tonight's, that are accessible from the comfort of home. One of the things the Northern California chapter is committed to is making sure that the programs and services we offer are accessible regardless of where you live, regardless of the community you live in, and regardless of how close you are to one of our physical chapter locations. These programs and services provide disease, symptom, and emotional health management tools to over 3,000 members of our community. For some members of our community, the cost of dealing with MS is significant, and this was true for Kim. A few years ago, Kim worked closely with our staff to help create the chapter's first care management program, which serves people like Marie. And when Marie was unable to work because her MS was unmanageable, a case manager helped her navigate the maze of disability benefits and affordable, accessible housing. Marie lives in a community where suitable housing options are super slim, and our case manager found the right local resource so that Marie was able to use the chapter's financial assistance program, and this allowed her to have a deposit to put down on accessible housing. In 2014, the care management program of the chapter and the financial assistance programs impacted the lives of 259 people, just like Marie, and perhaps like you. This program provided social work support in the home and helped pay for items that might otherwise be too expensive. These items can be things like medical supplies, home modification, scooter batteries to keep you mobile, emergency utility funds, air conditioners to cool you down, and counseling services to keep your spirit up. This past year, the Northern California chapter funded 56% more financial assistance than we did in 2013. We were able to leverage funds so that every dollar went farther, and these leveraged funds were used to provide long-term counseling and big remodel projects such as a bathroom modification so that someone can remain in their home and more independent. The chapter programs and services that volunteers like Kim help to create and promote keep our members informed, connected, and empowered so that all of us can live our best lives. So programs and services is certainly something that we're proud of, and when we talk about the financials, you'll be able to see it is an avenue where the chapter spends significant resources. Another way we help our members to live their best lives with MS is through our advocacy efforts. So changing one life at a time makes a huge difference, but systemic change through policy is the way we're really going to reshape the world. In addition to being a self-help group leader, Kim is also a longtime member of the Chapter Government Relations Committee. Under the leadership of Tammy Polsek and Terry Farmer, who are our leading government relations activists and longtime volunteers, Kim embarked on a new initiative of recruiting and training 25 district activist leaders who are responsible for spearheading advocacy efforts in their respective counties throughout Northern California. So this is super important because these 25 new district activists will be the presence in the face of changing policy day in and day out. This talented group of activists conducts face-to-face visits with their elected officials, advocating for policies and proposals that benefit the greater MS community. They also attend town hall meetings and policy forums representing the society. The difference they make keeps our politicians accountable and aware to make sure that the decisions they make and the votes they take keep the interests of people with MS at the center. Tammy is a caregiver for her mother, Phyllis, who lives with MS, and Tammy's volunteered for the chapter for 25 years. And like Kim, she's also in the Society's Volunteer Hall of Fame. Terry, who's a former district attorney and a deputy attorney general, is a fixture at the state capitol, and his help in advocating for two key state legislators has been a huge help and has allowed us to move legislation forward through personal relationships. Both Terry and Tammy have served on the Society's federal and state activism councils, where they're among a select group of volunteer leaders who've shaped national policy priorities. These two also helped craft the Society's healthcare reform principles. Because of their leadership, in 2014, our team of MS activists conducted over 70 face-to-face visits to their state senators and assembly members in support of two new pieces of legislation. Our network of activists, so all the people, those district captains and all the people they rallied to support the network, were instrumental in gaining victory of the passage of two bills. One was Senate Bill 1052, which basically requires the Department of Managed Care and Insurance to develop a standard formulary template to be used by health plans and insurers to display their drug formularies. This is a big win. This is a great victory for people living with MS because it will make it easier for consumers to compare across health plans and the drug benefits. Our network of activists also had a second major legislative achievement in 2014, and this is the passage of Senate Bill 964, which requires the Department of Managed Health Care again oversight of health plans in regards to compliance with timely access to care and provider networks adequacy standards. So the second victory really allows people with MS to have faster access. So, right, timely access, faster access to a wider network of providers. So those of you who have had challenges accessing neurological care will be glad to see this, Senate Bill 964, come to fruition. The Northern California chapter is grateful to have a wonderful community of members and volunteers, activists, donors, and event participants so that we can continue to make connections that count. But all of this, community members, volunteers, activists, donors, and event participants. That's all about you. The people who give to the National MS Society through time, talent, or your treasury make a difference in ensuring that the Northern California chapter is relevant and meaningful. The sound financial management practices and excellent stewardship of donors have once again made it possible for the Northern California Board to direct an above and beyond research gift. This year, $3.2 million directly to MS research to move research forward faster. Just to give you some sense of how extraordinary that $3.2 million is, the Northern California chapter in 2014 had an especially excellent year. And in 2013, we made an above and beyond research gift of $100,000. And this year, due to some very generous gifts, your Northern California chapter made an above and beyond research gift of $3.2 million. So as part of the annual report to the chapter membership, I am pleased to share the results from fiscal year 14. So we really just finished. Our fiscal year ends on September 30th. And I'm going to share with you the results. They're unaudited, but materially correct. The Northern California chapter had its best year ever. These numbers are a result of your involvement, your talents, and your efforts. With your support, we continue to grow and fund more mission delivery than at any time before. We've raised last year over $9 million, $9,008,509 in revenue. Between FY13 to FY14, our growth is 69% greater than it was the year before. This says a lot about your commitment, and it's quite an understatement to say thank you. Let's talk a little bit about where the money comes from and how you all decide to give to the chapter. 46% of the chapter's revenue comes from special events, the special events we talked about, like Walk MS, Bike MS, and Muckfest MS. Thank you for participating and raising funds for your chapter. Collectively, there are about, between Bike and Walk and Muck, there are over 10,000 special event participants. The average special event participant reaches out to over 10 donors. So you can see the power of the personal connections in the network. The second largest revenue source last year came from members of the Lowry Circle. The Lowry Circle is a group of people named after the founder of the National MS Society, Sylvia Lowry. This group of supporters, they are people who have chosen to make a difference in the world they leave behind. This year, the chapter received $3.2 million from members' wills or estate plans. It's an amazing gift to continue to make an impact and pay it forward in such a substantial way. There's really no end to the good that people can do. So the money comes from mostly special events, secondly, this past year bequests, and then private individual donations. And this next slide is going to show you how we spend the money. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about society spending and then specifically about Northern California spending. In 2014, the society invested $50 million into 350 promising research projects. And Dr. Allegretta will tell us more about that. And in 2015, the Society has already committed that we will continue to grow that $50 million investment to another $52.3 million in FY2015. But none of this research would be happening without you. You all are the fuel behind the research and behind the researchers. So thank you. We certainly need the scientists in those labs making those discoveries. But it starts with the efforts of a single person deciding to do something about MS now. Every chapter remits a portion of its income to fund cutting-edge research. In FY2014, the Northern California chapter remitted over $4.4 million, or 54% of our budget. So on this slide, it says how your donations fund the mission. And 54% of our revenue last year went to fund research directly. We're so fortunate in Northern California to have some of the best scientific research happening right in our backyard. This year alone, there's over $12 million of MS research happening locally at UCSF, Stanford, J. David Gladstone Institutes, UC Davis, and UC Berkeley. This past summer, the Society committed an additional $30 million to support progressive MS research studies. 22 in all, to make sure that we raise the profile of progressive MS. We're doing this through an international initiative called International Progressive MS Alliance. The National MS Society took a leadership role because we know that raising the profile of progressive MS allows us to increase our ability to find solutions for all people living with this disease. On the expense side, I think it's important for you all to know as community members that last year, 89% of every dollar you donated or fundraised for your chapter was spent on programs or research. It cost us 11 cents to raise a dollar, while the industry standard is about 25 cents per dollar, the Northern California chapter was able to raise $9 million at a cost of 11 cents per dollar. We are managing your money very well. So thank you. Thank you for trusting us and for giving to us and for rallying your community, your friends and your family, and those who care about you. Thank you for introducing the National MS Society to them and for them rallying around you and supporting the Northern California chapter. In terms of our another component of the business section of the annual meeting, our final business element is to review the slate of the 2015 Board of Trustees. So the Board of Trustees is a volunteer board, and it leads the chapter and carries out the Society's mission and goals. It's my privilege to present to you the slate for FY 2015. This slide will show you the names and places of employment of those board members. I want to share with you the work of the board and give you some sense of the impact they make on our chapter. Collectively, your board has raised over $400,000 and donated over 600 volunteer hours, specifically in the areas of strategic planning, fiduciary oversight, acknowledging donors, participating in events, raising money, and ensuring that the Northern California chapter is relevant, valuable, and meeting your needs. Nominations to serve on the board come from a variety of sources, including people can self-nominate. There are recommendations from our membership. Both board members and staff also make recommendations for potential board members. Board positions are for 1 year, and they are renewable. So up on the presentation is the slate of the 2015 Board of Trustees. I will read those names. They are as follows: Jay Thayer of Salesforce, Catherine Bach of Nevro, Natalie Brisbane, Will Bryant, Point B, Nancy Beal, UCSF PT and Rehab, Dr. Jonah Chan, UCSF Neurology, Dr. Bud Colby of Colby Medical, Biomedical Consultants, Dr. Elizabeth Crabtree, UCSF Med Center, Michelle Dennehy, Heather Fargo, Matt Frinzi of Power Vision, Tom Galizia, Deloitte Consulting, Dr. Doug Gooden, UCSF, Dave Holtman, Bank of the West, Warren Kiss, ENY, Penny Nuss, a Fiduciary Trust International, Dave Larson, Piedmont Grocery, Angie Lai, Wells Fargo, Chuck Robbins, Cisco, John Schaefer of Mercy Medical Group, and Dan Stokes of J. Stokes Agency. On behalf of the 2015 Board of Trustees, it is our pleasure to serve you, and we look forward to reporting next year on all the accomplishments that together we make happen. So this concludes the business portion of our annual meeting, which I think is pretty close to 20 minutes, I hope. And at this time, I'd like to welcome Dr. Mark Allegretta to the line. Dr. Allegretta is the Associate Vice President of Commercial Research for the National MS Society. And Mark's responsibilities include providing leadership and direction for the Society's commercial research programs and portfolio, including partnerships developed through Fast Forward. Mark joined the Society in 2014, and he has over 28 years of experience in biotechnology and pharmaceutical operations. He most recently was the Chief Scientific Officer and co-founder of BioMosaics in Burlington, Vermont, where he dealt with all aspects of cancer biomarker development, licensing deals, and business partnerships. Mark earned his bachelor's degree from Hartwood College and his PhD in cellular and molecular biology from the University of Vermont. Dr. Allegretta was also the recipient of the National MS Society postdoctoral fellowship at Stanford University. Together, we're going to learn more about the research the Society is conducting, as well as get a sneak peek into some recent breakthroughs in MS research. Dr. Allegretta, thanks for staying up late and spending some time with us. Welcome to the call.
Now, thank you for that introduction. And also, I wanted to thank you to the National MS Society and staff members, my fellowship, because I consider this a privilege to have received fellowship from the MS Society. And it was so much more than simply survival for 3 years worth of my postdoc at Stanford. It truly was a valuable stepping stone for much of my career. So what we're going to talk about today, if we could move forward to the next slide, please. Thank you very much. There we go. Okay. So what I'm going to talk about today is we're going to talk about recent progress and opportunities to discuss exciting areas of research direction in society. And we're going to talk about the goals and how we want to stop MS and what the society is doing to drive progress for people with all types of MS. You've heard some discussion about progressive MS. We'll talk about that in detail, and we'll obviously talk about recent progress. So next slide, please. Have the next slide, please. Hello?
Pardon for the intrusion. Hello. This is the conference operator. Dr. Allegretta, I'm hearing that your line is coming in and out as gradually as you talk.
Are we better now?
Yes, I can hear you better now.
Great. Fantastic. Okay. You can go to the next slide, please. Okay. Okay, thank you. My apologies for the connection there. So we're going to talk about first, of course, what is MS. And so, of course, MS is a chronic disease that attacks the central nervous system and the brain, spinal cord, optic nerve. And you might have heard of the term myelin. And so it results in the loss of nerve-insulating myelin and nerve fibers. And so this can be the term that you might have heard is the myelin sheath. And this is thought of as like insulation around a wire. And, of course, the term sclerosis comes from, it means the scar. So it's hardening of tissue that forms after an injury occurs. Next slide, please. So the normal functioning nerve cell with the cell body is shown in the lower left there. And you can see that you've got an axon that has the myelin sheath around it. That's the insulation. And on the right, when a nerve cell is damaged, we have this activity, this region of demyelination. So that's a common way to think of the insulation around the wires being destroyed. And of course, we know that MS is an autoimmune disease, and that means that cells of the immune system, for some reason, attack the myelin sheath. But the good news is that we can begin to look at ways to repair those demyelinated areas. So it's sort of like thinking about the black electrical tape that you would use to cover up a wire that has a short circuit. And that's a new area of research that's that we're making a lot of progress in. Next slide, please. So the types of MS, the four known types of MS, of course, are relapsing remitting, and that's the most common form. Approximately 85% of individuals begin with this course of disease. And primary progressive MS is much less common. About 10% experience this. Of course, the relapsing remitting phase is where an event happens and symptoms occur, and then there's a return to near normal conditions, but never all the way to baseline conditions in a period of time where there's no disease, and then a subsequent event takes place again. In primary progressive disease, it's much more a direct onset towards progressive symptoms that continue for a period of time. And secondary progressive disease, about half of individuals experience this after having some initial period of relapsing remitting MS. But this is important because we've talked about progressive MS, and what we say is that half of all individuals with MS are experiencing progression in some form at some point in time. So it's obviously a very important area for us to understand better. And then lastly, progressive relapsing form, which is relatively rare. That's where a disease starts off initially with a progressive form and then reverts to a more relapsing condition. Next slide, please. So what causes MS? So we know, of course, about genetics, and we know that the National MS Society has funded the International MS Genetics Consortium, and this is a rather significant effort where over 80,000 people have been tested to identify over 159 or 159 genetic variants that contribute to MS risk right now. So we know there's some genetic component or predisposition to the disease. And we also are learning more about the environmental component that might trigger the disease. We know, for example, that vitamin D is important. You might have heard this, and there are some studies out now that actually show that low levels of vitamin D might actually be a predictor of a progressive course of disease. And you might have heard about the potential for a high-salt diet being a contributing factor. These all interact with the genetic components to add to the risk that lead to autoimmunity. And it's the combination of these elements, in this case, that leads to the loss of myelin and ultimately to the loss of nerve fibers. Next slide, please. So what are the research goals of the MS Society? We want to stop MS in its tracks. We want to stop it from progressing forward. And we obviously want to learn ways to restore the function that's been lost. So can we get back what's been lost? We know in many cases in MS that you don't get back to baseline, so to speak, after an episode. We want to find ways to restore what's been lost. And then, of course, importantly, we all want to prevent it forever and put an end to this disease forever. So prevention and identifying what the triggers and risk factors are the research efforts that will move us in that direction forward. And it's important to note that there currently is no therapy that can stop or treat MS progression. So despite the progress that's been made with various disease-modifying agents, there still currently is no therapy that can stop or treat MS progression. Next slide, please. So more specifically, what do we mean by each of these three areas? So to stop MS, what we want to do is we want to understand the immune activity and what's going on at that level. We need to better understand how damage occurs and how to protect it. We need to accelerate the development of new therapies that will help us stop the disease. And that's an important part of the commercial research effort at the Society. In terms of restoring the disease, this is where myelin repair comes in. And it's important to look, in addition to repair and myelin, but also to look at new studies in rehabilitative medicine and exercise and new ways to treat MS symptoms. All of these are important components of restoring functionality that's lost through MS. And, of course, ending the disease, as I mentioned before, involves identifying the risk and triggering factors, such as the genes that are involved, and the lifestyle factors and environmental factors that are all involved in preventing the disease. And it's important that we follow each of these three paths, but do so with three priority areas that have been identified as gaps in our learning and understanding of MS. So progressive MS, you've heard about, nervous system repair, and of course, wellness and lifestyle changes are three priority areas that we want to focus on currently to address how to best stop, restore, and end MS. Next slide, please. So how do we spend our research dollars? This shows the three categories. And you can see that we currently have 380 active projects going on. And so this represents the collective amount of dollars that have gone into some studies that have started and those that are some that are ongoing currently as well. So $79 million to stop for 199 projects, $9 million to end, and $50 million to restore. And it's important to note that in 2014, we reached a landmark milestone of breaking the $50 million level for funding research within the Society. So that's rather significant. And, of course, it's important as well to note that Society funds more research than any other MS organization in the world. Next slide, please. So what is the National MS Society doing to drive progress? Next slide. So the highest priority, of course, is understanding that research is essential to realizing these goals to stop and restore MS for everyone. And since its inception, the Society has invested nearly 870 million projects, and that began with the first three projects funded back in 1947. And through that time, the Society has contributed to many of the FDA-approved therapies. Much of that was at the discovery research phase, and some of it was at a more development, more R&D phase for some of these discoveries, some of them coming out of institutions in your area, of course. And fueling research through increased investment is a big part of our objective. As I mentioned, $50.6 million for 380 new ongoing projects, and as you've already heard, a goal of $52 million-plus for 2015. As I said, the Society leads the way, funding more research and impacting more lives than any other MS organization in the world. Next slide, please. So what is the track record within the Society of success? How have we done? How do we measure that, actually? Some of the aspects of what we've been good at involve better and faster diagnosis of MS. And by faster diagnosis, what we mean is earlier diagnosis. We want to get better at detecting the disease earlier so that we can so that there's less to restore. The sooner we can diagnose the disease and treat it accordingly, the better off we're going to be. As I mentioned, a lot of the basic research has been involved in propelling many of the disease-modifying therapies that are currently approved by FDA, and this is certainly something that we're very active in. And the identification of the MS risk genes, again, through the International MS Genetic Consortium has been a significant effort over time. I think that's what's interesting now is that with some of the emphasis on wellness and lifestyle is that some of the first results are coming in terms of looking at the benefits of aerobic exercise and how this can be important for fighting MS fatigue. And, of course, this changes the age-old strategy of just take it easy. Many people were told that originally on when getting the initial diagnosis of MS to just take it easy. Stay home and relax. And we know now that certain types of exercise can be very beneficial for fighting fatigue and also potentially some cognitive and behavioral aspects as well of the disease. The link between vitamin D and MS risk has been a very important finding over the past several years, and this continues to be an important area of research. And again, at the recent wellness meeting that took place in Dallas and Fort Worth, there was a big emphasis on looking further into the link between vitamin D and MS risk. Part of the challenges in that setting involve some of the tools needed and the importance of doing properly controlled clinical studies to really get at some very confident data about the exact nature of the association between vitamin D and MS risk. So those will be areas that will be coming up in the future. We mentioned this aspect of discovering the potential for myelin repair. And that is that's very, very exciting research. I think I'll get into some more details on that in a little bit. The other thing that I want to talk about is training leading MS researchers for making breakthroughs today. It's important to understand that we really need to recognize that fellowship programs of all varieties that the Society sponsors are important in fueling the pipeline of tomorrow's scientists in MS. So really, it's one thing to fund research. It's another thing to have a good crew of well-trained scientists that understand the context for MS research, the context for clinical study, how to do properly controlled clinical trials. It's not something that's always taught, right? It's usually something that's learned by experience. So we want to provide that experience, and that has been a very important aspect of improving the Society's ability to generate a successful research. Next slide, please. So a couple of aspects of the research strategies that are worth note are the fact that the strategies must be comprehensive and collaborative. So we really cast a wide net in looking at pursuing whatever promising path might be available, wherever it might exist. And we want to expand and strengthen the global research, MS research community. And this is something that is also extremely important in the commercial research setting. We really want to look wherever we need to, we want to go wherever we need to go in order to do the best research. And at the same time, we need to be nimble. We need to be able to move quickly to seize on opportunities as they become available. So it's a bit of a balance to not be too big and not be too small, but that's what we strive for. And a lot of the studies, we like them when they're investigator-initiated and targeted, because we know, of course, that our well-trained MS clinicians and scientists understand the proper context for all of this type of work. And so it's important that we look there first to find out how to do studies in that context, because they'll be more productive. We find that that's a more efficient way for us to do research. And, of course, we use a centralized peer review process for funding, so we have the best experts, the best key opinion leaders in the specific field of interest that we're looking at, and that helps us fund the most promising and credible research. And also, our staff is quite adept at stewardship of these programs. I know I can speak to specifically the Fast Forward program and the commercial side, in that it takes a lot of work to manage some of these milestone-driven projects. So that there's a great, really capable people that are managing these projects going forward. And as I said, fund worldwide, no boundaries. Go wherever we need to go to fund the best research possible. Next slide, please. So more on the research strategies. Basic and translational investigations, what does that mean? So basic research, is something that more relates to the really close-in scientific discoveries at a fundamental level. And translational investigations relate more to taking something from bench to bedside. So it's great if you've got the neatest idea about how to remyelinate. However, if that can't be translated into an effective medicine with an identifiable development pathway, it's not likely to be successful. So we are always aware of both the basic and translational aspects of the research portfolio. We find that we are more productive by fostering collaboration and making connections. We take an interdisciplinary approach, and that's much more efficient. For us, the basic line is you want to get the best person for the job, and that mentality helps us achieve that goal. The Society has done quite a bit to generate and support shared resources such as tissue banks and DNA banks. This is a valuable resource, and many investigators take advantage of this. The ability to have well-defined, well-characterized DNA banks and sample material that has good data to go along with it should not be underestimated. That's an extremely valuable resource. And again, training awards to attract and keep scientists and physicians focused on MS. And commercial drug development partnerships to speed developments and therapies. The Fast Forward program, which I'll talk about in a bit, also shares this mission of attracting scientists to the MS field and providing incentive for them, particularly in the commercial space, to remain in the fight against MS. The Society also sponsors think tanks and workshops to identify gaps and opportunities. Some examples were the Nervous System Repair Initiative, the 2010 Progressive MS Think Tank, which of course led to the International Progressive MS Alliance, and then the more recent 2014 Wellness Strategy Meeting that took place. These are important steps because they're building blocks to much larger efforts. It's really, really difficult to be impactful without having these think tank opportunities ahead of time in front of the larger efforts to build larger consortia to tackle some of these goals. Next slide, please. So what are some of the trials that are ongoing right now? What are the clinically oriented studies that we're most interested in, and what types of approaches are the society funding? There are, as I mentioned, nerve repair and along those lines, nerve protection are two key areas that we're focusing on quite a bit. And so there are four trials that are involved in some aspect of that right now. Lipoic acid is one that's being tested. This is a quite potent antioxidant. And this has been shown to not only be an antioxidant, but also to have neuroprotective activities. Another compound called phenytoin is something that reduces the entry of sodium into nerve fibers. And this may be related to some of the findings of high-salt diet being a factor involving promoting MS. And the interesting thing about this study is that it looks specifically at the optic nerve with some new technology, with some new imaging technology that's relatively easy and straightforward to do compared to typical MRIs. The MS SMART trial, testing three therapies that may also have nerve protective properties in secondary progressive MS. This is a very interesting study underway now looking at the combined effect of three separate compounds. And then also Budalast, a collaborative trial in 250 people with progressive MS. This is an anti-inflammatory drug that also has neuroprotective effects. So these are some very interesting clinical trials underway. Next slide, please. So fast forward is the Society's commercial research vehicle. And essentially, it has been in existence since 2007. It's a nonprofit subsidiary that is fully owned by the National MS Society and is governed by its own board of leaders and volunteers and society staff. And it's funded in part through regular philanthropic contributions and a collaborative strategic partnership. To date, there have been 33 projects, and 20 have been through the regular philanthropic donations, and 13 have been through a collaborative fund with EMD Serono, pharmaceutical company. Next slide, please. And what the goal of Fast Forward is to fund the gap between this discovery research and the translational research that is needed for early clinical studies, okay? So some people might think, why fund companies to do this work? Well, clearly, we need companies to develop these therapies. And sometimes what you find is that companies, even within themselves, have their own competition for projects. So if you're within a company and you're looking at developing a compound and it may be involved in, say, rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis, which are much larger markets than multiple sclerosis, you're more likely to go for those indications. Well, Fast Forward can sometimes come in, provide some funding and incentive for those companies to stay in the fight against MS, and that's a very good example. The one example is an imaging project that we have right now with GE Healthcare. You would imagine GE Healthcare would be fully capable of funding this project, but they need incentive to study it in MS as opposed to some other diseases, and it's been a very wonderful relationship with that company because they're obviously so credible and capable of carrying out the research plan. The goal of the projects in Fast Forward is to take some of the risk out of it and increase the value of these projects so that it makes them more likely to move on to the next stage in their development pathway, whether that's getting some funding from outside sources or establishing a partnership with a larger pharmaceutical company that's going to take it through approval. These are important steps in moving these opportunities through the development pathway. We also have the goal of increasing the number of companies engaged in R&D for both diagnosis and treatment of MS, and we serve to partner with stakeholders to achieve those shared goals together. Next slide, please. So I mentioned that we have two funds. The general fund, which is regular philanthropic contributions, has 20 projects, $9 million invested to date. And the collaborative fund through EMD Serono, which is owned by Merck KGaA, 13 projects, $5.2 million committed to date. So approximately 500,000 per project, although this varies a bit. And we have 11 active programs going on right now at this point in time, primarily within the general fund itself. Next slide, please. And how do we find these new commercial opportunities? Do they just show up or what? Well, of course, we actively work to seek them out. So we attend various biotechnology and pharmaceutical meetings and conferences and partnering meetings, Biotech Showcase and Bio and others, and have many meetings with people and companies that have potential opportunities for new therapies for MS. We have our own discovery research activities. So within that portfolio of 50 million in research, there's quite a bit that's happening that is working its way towards translational research and potential commercial opportunities. So we take an active role in looking through that for new opportunities. Sometimes we have research forums, or sometimes chapters have research forums, and those serve as other opportunities for us to become aware of commercial potential. And we're looking to some future mining efforts as well. And then simply networking and connections has been a very productive way to find new opportunities. And this, of course, has the advantage in that when the connections come through those within society, they're often within people that already understand the challenges of MS and are well-positioned to take their opportunity forward, as opposed to the situations where we're bringing new companies and new people in from outside the MS field into the MS space. Both has some benefits and challenges associated with them. Next slide. The portfolio of fast-forward commercial research projects is shown here based by area. And as you can see, a large number of them have been in the immunomodulation area. And I believe that simply reflects a bit of a historical perspective in that that was where many of the opportunities originally came in and were deemed as most viable at their point in development. The nerve repair and neuroprotection areas and symptoms management are actually growing quite well right now, and we are indeed looking to expand on neuroprotection and repair proposals, and our next round will have that focus. We do have some diagnostics projects underway, and one of these in particular is very interesting in that it's taking advantage of some new developments in the field of molecular biology and molecular diagnostics to get at the very earliest point in time to make a diagnosis of MS. So clinically isolated syndrome with this test potentially could be all you need to move into a definitive MS diagnosis. And we're looking at ways to validate that assay work and to build it into existing algorithms to improve diagnostic power. Next slide, please. The point of this slide is to show that we fund commercial programs by many different stages in the drug development pathway. So we do projects that are based on lead observations, so identifying what a new chemical entity might be that could potentially be a drug. We also have programs that are involved in optimizing an existing drug, making it better so that it's more suited for use in MS. We see many projects that are so-called proof of concept studies where someone has a compound of interest, perhaps it's even been used for other indications, and we want to know, does it work for MS? Many projects come in the areas of looking at typical animal safety, toxicology, pharmacokinetics, and pharmacodynamics. This is looking at how the drug candidate behaves in vivo. These are important and essential safety studies to be done before anyone can progress towards a phase one clinical study. And in some cases, we actually participate in the clinical study itself, be that in the manufacturing of material for clinical supply or in sponsoring some phase of the filing an investigational new drug application or funding some portion of the phase one clinical safety studies. Next slide, please. So to talk a bit about some of the other areas of research that are important, wellness, as you may have heard, is very important right now, and we're just beginning to realize some of the potential in that area. So this is an extremely important focus area going forward in our research strategy. And so what we see, some studies that are underway, there's over 30 projects that are underway right now, and some of these involve new strategies for managing balance control. There's even a physical cycling protocol, a regimen that has been shown to potentially reduce spasticity. And similar exercise regimens are being evaluated for people with advanced MS. And because of many advances in technology and tools, there are some home-based exercise programs to look at improving mobility and cardiovascular health. This is an important area to build upon. And, of course, the big challenge is that there are some challenges associated with readouts of cognitive function in MS. And so we're looking for new strategies to improve that, new strategies to look at measuring outcomes of cognition as well. And so wellness and rehab is just getting started, and I would say that over the next year or two, there's going to be many more new observations in this area. Next slide, please. Nervous system repair, again, this is a very, very interesting area. And so one project that I want to talk about in particular in the repair area is something that's being funded by Fast Forward, the commercial funding arm. And this particular project, this is actually taking place at a company called Gliologics, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area. And this project was recently funded by Fast Forward. And what they are looking at is a compound that prevents something that's called glutamate excitotoxicity. I know that's a mouthful, but essentially the idea is that too much neurotransmitter stimulation can lead to nerve damage. And they've got very nice data showing that their compound prevents it. But what's really interesting about this is that the compound actually has already been used in other settings in humans. And so this is what fits into a class of drugs called repurposed medicines. And what's interesting about this is that the fact that it's already approved means that you can take advantage of the existing data at FDA for safety studies, and it can have a much accelerated pathway to approval. And this is something similar that took place with a drug that you may be aware of called dimethyl fumarate, or Tecfidera. So Tecfidera was originally in another form, was something that was used in psoriasis. And so through work through Mike Racky and others at Ohio State University, found that it had some applications to the animal models of MS, and that led to further development and approval. So we're very excited about this company and this opportunity, the fact that it's looking at nervous system repair, and the fact that it is potentially a repurposed drug with new and quicker route through approval. There are some other technologies involved, looking at imaging to speed up tracking of damage and repair. And one thing to talk about is something that's called optical coherence tomography, or OCT. And essentially, this is a method of looking at nerve fiber thickness in the optic nerve. And so rather than needing an MRI, you can use a simpler instrument that can image that, and that can be viewed as a readout of nerve damage. That's a very interesting approach that's being applied in several clinical trials that the Society is sponsoring. And speaking of clinical trials, we know that clinical trial design and outcome measures to test these repair strategies are needed. And so two efforts underway are the International Advisory Committee on Clinical Trials in MS, and also something called MOSAIC, the MS Outcome Assessments Consortium, which is an alliance between MS Society and the Food and Drug Administration and pharmaceutical representatives, all in coalition with the Critical Path Institute, to look at new outcome measures, new tools that can be implemented to test repair strategies that will lead to better and quicker clinical trials for for improving our ability to move new therapies through the pipeline. And of course, exploring how to stimulate the body's ability to repair myelin is very important, and we know of some compounds that are capable of doing that, and the I'm going to give you a list of words to remember. So in this case, the word is oligodendrocyte, or the oligodendrocyte is a cell that makes myelin, and we know that they are present at the lesion, but they seem to need some help in being stimulated to begin making myelin again. And so some compounds have been shown to do that, and those are being tested. But also, we know that in some studies of stem cells in preclinical models, that this also is capable of inducing the initiation of remyelination. And this is very exciting. One study was done where using stem cells derived from self skin, so they're from yourself and they wouldn't be rejected, capable of going in and initiating myelin repair. Very exciting area of research. Much more is needed to move these to larger, more extensive clinical trials, but those are beginning and are underway, and we're very excited about the promise for that line of research. Next slide, please. Some additional strategic initiatives at the Society that are extremely important, for example, are the Pediatric MS Network, and this is essential to foster research on pediatric MS. This is essentially something that wasn't recognized until recently, and so now this is an important effort at the Society. I already talked about the MS Outcomes Assessment Consortium, so I don't need to talk about that again, but I would like to mention the MS Prevalence Work Group and the Risk Factors for Progression Study, or SUMMIT. These two efforts are very important in that they seek to better calibrate and track people who have MS in the U.S. and to establish long-term tracking to better understand what drives progressive disability. This is something that the Society has recognized as an important, necessary component of improving our ability to develop new therapies to stop, end, and restore MS. And every other major disease category has recognized this as well. So in cardiovascular disease, some people are aware of the Framingham Heart Study, very long study done to compile data, sample material, and information to get at the best way to track individuals with a disease and to understand what drives, in this case, progression. So these are efforts that are underway at the Society and are rather significant, and we look forward to their development. Next slide, please. One of the benefits of the Society is that we like to be nimble. And one way that we're nimble in the commercial research side, and this is also carries over into discovery research as well, is our ability to make partnerships with other organizations and to essentially identify some synergistic relationships both within and outside of the MS research community. And one example of that was in a fast-forward project where an Italian company called Axam was funded to develop a discovery effort for a new compound for treatment of MS. And the compound target that they were after had some applications potentially for type 1 diabetes as well, another autoimmune disease. So the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, in alliance with Fast Forward and the Italian Multiple Sclerosis Association, got together to co-fund this program. And this is a trend that we would like to build upon. We do know that in the area of other neurodegenerative diseases, that if there are sometimes other potential for perhaps Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's disease, that we often look to the other associations to see if there's interest in co-funding projects. And that helps us add synergy and leverage our effort. We're very much interested in continuing on this path. Next slide, please. I just want to talk briefly about a couple of portfolio successes, and I'll just be quick on these two slides. So this is our ability in the commercial space to move development opportunities forward down the pathway. So we had one company called Apotope that was a fast-forward funded project, and that led to a partnership with Merck Serono for $200 million. And this is a project that actually right now is in phase 2A study. So that's moving into the clinic. Another one is Amplimmune, a company that worked with Fast Forward to develop something called AMP-110. And although this particular project wasn't developed for multiple sclerosis, it did lead to acquisition of the company. And because Fast Forward is an investment arm in that we seek a return from our investment in the commercial space, we did the society did receive a payment for that acquisition event. Next slide, please. And similarly, there have been some financings that have led to significant development in the MS space. So a fast-forward project with Canvex. This is for a compound that has potential for spasticity. This led to funds from the Wellcome Trust as well as Merck Serono Ventures, and that has put them in a position to begin phase one. Concert Pharmaceuticals, also a receptor modulator for spasticity, was funded by Fast Forward, and that in part enabled them to have an IPO to raise funds for a phase two clinical study in spasticity. Innate Immunotherapeutics, also a Fast Forward project, is currently in phase two. They raised $10 million to advance into phase two. And then Diagenics, this is a company that is developing the diagnostic opportunity that I mentioned for, it's called MS Precise, for the ability to look at diagnosis at first clinical presentation, was able to raise funding to move that program forward. So these have been some successes within the commercial space that we'd like to point to. Next slide. So we are working very hard, as you can see, to making progress for everyone living with MS. Next slide, please. And some of the recent breakthroughs that we want to talk about, an important one, it's important to mention, especially since it's timely, is that there has been a recent approval of a new disease-modifying therapy called Lemtrada, or also known as alemtuzumab, or also initially as Campath. And this is a drug that was already approved in Canada and Europe, and nearly a year ago, the application to the Food and Drug Administration was rejected in part, for some challenges to the evaluation of the clinical study design. But through outreach and communication from the MS Society and other societies, including the American Academy of Neurology, it allowed an opportunity for a re-review of some additional data and a new statistical analysis that was put together by the sponsor, Genzyme, a Sanofi company. And so the FDA recently approved this. And this is a great outcome. This is a very strong medicine. It's intended for those who have relapsing MS and generally for those who have had an inadequate response to two or more drugs that are already indicated for use. And there are some potential side effects to it, but it works in this way, potentially, of resetting the immune system. So we're excited about that recent approval. And we have already mentioned really briefly that the Society has funded a study that may show that low serum vitamin D in early MS can be a predictor of later disease progression, specifically progressive forms of MS. And we've talked about the new trials underway of neuroprotective agents, again, in progressive MS. And you've heard about the launch of the International Progressive MS Alliance. This is a considerable effort, 10 MS societies, and the National MS Society is a collaborative leader in this. And they have already funded 22 pilot awards to build activity worldwide. And there is a new collaborative network award announcement that's coming out to build upon that capacity. And these are, again, collaborative networks where it is advantageous to have synergy between different groups, and commercial entities are welcome to be part of those groups because we believe that to truly develop the most important and translatable research that the commercial potential has to be exploited. in that case. Next slide, please. And restore the new targets for myelin repair strategies. There are three studies ongoing right now that all speak to repairing myelin. The most notable is something called anti-lingo, and this is in phase two. And we've talked about some of the imaging techniques to detect and track myelin and nerve fiber damage, specifically the optical coherence tomography approach, and some new targets to stimulate repair, even stem cell approaches to stimulate repair, and clinical trials that are underway of some new exploratory drugs to stimulate repair. This is obviously a big focus for us. And I referenced already the point below about society-supported researchers that have successfully transplanted stem cells derived from human skin into mice, promoting recovery like of MS-like symptoms. This is a very exciting area of research, one that I think even 5 years ago there was a considerable amount of skepticism for, and now looks quite promising. Next slide, please. Let's see. So some new restore opportunities that have come through that we discussed, the therapies for improving MS symptoms, symptoms management being a key component of what we want to build upon, and the rehab research that we talked about, importantly looking at things such as resistance weight training, cycling regimens, walking and exercise to improve quality of life, and the cognitive rehabilitative studies that are ongoing right now. And even a study that has been looking at meditation in terms of improving quality of life, and I don't know if anyone may have seen, but there was a study in Scientific American talking about the benefits of meditation, specifically in building certain components of the brain. It's worth a look if you have the time. Next slide, please. And the recent breakthroughs in the end, to end MS forever, I talked about the susceptibility genes, the 80,000 individuals that have been tested, and the 159 genes that contribute in some way to MS susceptibility that have been explored. These have led to some very important genetic differences identified and will undoubtedly be useful information going forward as we begin to build more therapies towards ending MS. The association with the environment, including links to Epstein-Barr virus exposure and vitamin D and MS risk. These are all society-funded projects and the society-funded clinical trial to look at vitamin D specifically on MS disease activities underway. And some additional data that's come out from the society about the exposure to cigarette smoke and child obesity as being contributing factors to MS risk as well. Next slide. And just to wrap up with the last two slides here, I believe, is to point out that the pace and interest in MS is increasing quite significantly. You can see from 1998 to 2013 the increase in the number of publications that are coming out, no doubt in part to the actions of the society in funding this very vigorous and vital research effort. Next slide, please. And that if you look over time, that looking from 1947 through to 2014, that the significance of the contribution of the research funding and the contribution specifically that they have made to the field of MS, going back all the way to initial society panels to improve diagnosis, an initial conference on trials, creating the pathway for new MS therapies, all the way moving up to today where we're talking about skin-derived stem cells and the first oral therapy for MS in 2010, a really extremely impressive and significant portfolio of research. And thanks to you all that it's been such a great effort, and very, very proud to be part of the society in part of this research effort, and look forward to moving things forward as quickly as we can to stop, end, and restore what's lost. So with that, I'll end my discussion, and I believe we will open it up to questions at this time.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone, please press the number one key. Again, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone, please press the number one key. There are no questions in queue at this time.
Dr. Algrada, this is Jackie from the Society. I have a question for you, if that's okay.
Sure.
So you talk a lot about all these really exciting pieces of research and breakthroughs that have been made recently. What are you most excited about, or what do you think that we'll start to hear more about, you know, in the near future?
That's a great question, and I there are so many things that I'm most excited about, and this is often the question that we say. It's a little bit like picking your favorite child, right? We can't do that. However, that said, I must say that one observation we're having is that there's been an increased number of opportunities to look at drugs that have already been used in humans for other purposes, and trying to find out if they might be applied to MS. So one area that I'm thinking of specifically are a couple of companies that we are working with where they have a compound that, for example, might have been used in the oncology setting in the past because it was a powerful immunomodulatory drug. It blocked certain aspects of the immune system. And what scientists have come to learn is that there are some similarities between certain cells in the immune system and certain cells in the nervous system and how they act. And this is likely caused by the fact that these cells are derived developmentally from the same tissue. And so these compounds, which initially were looked at for the ability to impact the immune system, if you put them in the research models where we look at nerve repair, nerve protection, for example, we're seeing some activity there. So the prospect for coming up with new drug opportunities, new therapies that impact nerve repair and can be done so in the context of a drug that's potentially repurposed because it's already been used for use in humans, this is especially exciting to me.
And a quick follow-up. I was curious if you could, how long does it take for a repurposed medication to get FDA approval?
Right, that's a very, there's a broad answer to that question because it can vary tremendously. And sometimes it can be a matter of years, but more often than that, it's less than what's typical for what's called a new chemical entity. So a typical pathway might take a new drug start to finish, it might take 10 years, it might take 12 years. A repurposed drug in some cases might take 5 years because it depends on how far along it is for its use in MS and how early in the stage of development the company needs to go in and evaluate that drug. So it's a little bit difficult to pin it down to a real number, but for certain it can be half as long as it would take for a typical new drug development effort.
Thank you. It's exciting.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone, please press the number one key. Again, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone, please press the number one key. And our first question comes from Gail. Go ahead.
Hello. I heard you mention glutamate in relation to MS. I was wondering, do you have any knowledge of glutathione being infused IV and its relation to glutamate?
That's a very good question, and I don't believe I've got the capacity to respond to you appropriately. I know I've heard about glutathione in terms of it, I guess, being a potential antioxidant and scavenger of free radicals and being involved in something that manages toxicity. So I believe that's the setting that it's been discussed most likely in the context of MS in looking at how certain compounds are metabolized. The glutamate story is a little bit different in that this is something that's involved specifically within the synapse, and it's a very local glutamate release. The project that I was talking about refers to a very local glutamate release. That's glutamate that's already formed inside of the cell, and it's a neurotransmitter, and so it's released, and that causes the axon to fire across the synapse. And the problem that happens there is that if that process continues too long, it essentially exhausts the nerve at that point, and that is believed to contribute to nerve cell death and damage. So I don't know that the two are related, but I'm going to look this up tomorrow. I'm going to look up glutathione tomorrow so I can have a better answer for you next time.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone, please press the number one key now. There are no further questions in queue at this time.
So with no one in mind,
I'll
ask one more question if you don't mind. This is Jackie again. You know, we talk a lot about remyelination and the research being done there. Is there anything that's being done as far as axonal damage?
Let's see. Well, most of the axonal damage studies that I'm aware of fit into the neuroprotection category. So any study that's looking at axonal damage is going to be in neuroprotection. And again, in our case, what's interesting is that some of the drugs that we're looking at that are potentially repurposed drugs, there's a class of them that act at the nucleus of the cell. So they are involved at some very fundamental processes that are involved in the way a cell responds to certain stimuli and the way a cell becomes activated or is sometimes shut down from being activated. And what's interesting is that some of those compounds that I'm thinking of, they not only impact the ability to repair, that is, they not only work at the oligodendrocyte level to induce myelin formation, but they also seem to work at preventing damage to nerve axons as well. So whether or not that's related to these cells being derived from similar developmental tissues initially, I'm not certain that anyone's looked at that in any great detail. But that's one aspect of the fact that it's this interplay between remyelination and nerve protection. Sometimes we see commonalities for a particular compound we're studying.
Thank you. That's so interesting.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the number one key. There are no questions in queue at this time.
All right, then. This is Janelle Del Carlo and Dr. Allegretta. I just wanted to thank you for speaking with us tonight. It's always so exciting to hear the scientific breakthroughs in MS research, and there are two slides that you showed beyond the research that made me just very proud to be associated with the National MS Society and hopefully made our members proud, and that was the one around the really traumatic growth in the number of publications over the last 5 years. And then also, it's pretty amazing to think that a woman who loved her brother and started the National MS Society in 1946 with the funding of 3 grants in 1947 is now responsible for funding over $868 million of MS research. So thank you so much for sharing not only all of the excitement, but also the nuts and bolts and cell biology and molecular biology that's fueling the MS research movement on both the commercial side and the basic bench research. So I want to thank all of you. I want to thank Dr. Allegretta. I want to thank each of you for joining us. We are grateful to have so much hope and promise as we look to the horizon. 2014 was certainly a success, and we look forward to sharing many more with you in the upcoming year. This concludes our program. Thank you, everyone, and good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is concluded. You may all disconnect.